This isn't music. This is the scream of science. 300 brake horsepower per liter of displacement, not passing in a blur at 200 miles per hour. And in the middle of the whole metal, the carbon, sits flesh and blood. These are the masters of speed. This is Formula One. Is Formula One.
Welcome to the Light Sights Let's Go F1 podcast, part of the season ticket on Douglas Own Radio. I have with me, as always, Rich Mason, and joined tonight also by Adam Knight. Say hello, guys.
Good evening.
Hello. Back for more.
Yes. How are we both doing, all right?
Well, got a bit of a sniffle at the moment, so apologies if I sound a bit bunged up now and again.
It's not COVID, is it?
Nope, definitely not COVID, because my youngest had a test on Sunday and is negative.
Excellente. And is it snowing in Pittsburgh yet, Adam?
We've definitely had some snow. Yeah, it's definitely taking a turn for the colder since the last time we spoke. That's a dead cert.
Nice. Okay, so with these guys, this week we will be covering the recent Grand Prix from Sakhir, which is basically Bahrain 2.0. And again, we were served up lots of action and talking points with Russell filling in for Hamilton after his positive COVID test in the Merck, and a maiden victory for Sergio Perez. It just seems to be one of those seasons where no matter what happens, you know, just anything can happen in this season. And, you know, the championships were wrapped up a couple of races ago, but we're still getting great racing. So it's really good to see. So our previous predictions, so myself, I predicted in this race that Verstappen would win, Bottas would come second, and Russell would come third. I am utterly, utterly wrong.
Quite wrong. Very wrong.
And Rich, you said Bottas, and then Perez second, and Verstappen third. So you actually got one of them.
One, nearly.
Nearly.
I would love to see documented evidence of anybody that predicted that podium.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah, so what did you have in your mind, Adam, when you about what could have happened? Obviously, it was Perez, Ocon, and Stroll, yeah? Is that right? Yeah,
that's clearly what you had.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah,
yeah. <today. laughs> Yeah, perfect. No, but who did you
Unfortunately, think? I didn't make last week's podcast, so I couldn't give you ahead of time, but yeah, no, I didn't see it going any other way.
No pictures, then it didn't happen.
I don't even think after... I mean, it depends on whether you would have asked me before or after the Hamilton COVID announcement, right? Yeah. But even so, I don't think that I would have had any of those three on the podium.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Interesting one. Okay, so as we say, it was at the Bahrain circuit, but we used the high-speed outer loop, which was really exciting, I thought. So we ended up with a qualifying time of 53.3 seconds, which is unbelievable, really, seeing that the average is probably about, 1 minute 17 seconds, 1 minute 18 seconds for an average circuit. Sure.
Yeah, definitely a blink and you'll miss it kind of a lap, that one, I think.
It really was. It was an extremely sort of low time and probably a bit of an unfair quiz question for you guys. Unless you've sort of guessed the sort of questions that I do ask now. But what was the lowest lap time before that? So at what track and who was it?
Oh, I think I know the time.
Oh, that's good.
I don't exactly know the time, but go on.
Go, what's the time, Adam?
I believe the fastest lap time was 60 seconds even.
It was slightly lower than that. It was under a minute.
Was it, though?
I believe so. It was okay. 58. It was 58 seconds, from what I believe.
Quali lap or racing laps? Are we talking?
I think it was qualifying. It was in 1974.
Okay. All right. Because I thought I had heard the only reason I know the number at all was because I thought I had heard something in the commentary of the race on Sunday that mentioned that they'd never been below a 60-second lap.
I think you're right. I think that was a race lap.
Okay, race lap. Yeah, 60 second even. Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. So, any guesses?
Not from the set. I was going to suggest it was possibly they were getting down to just over a minute in Austria, but
you're right. It wasn't Austria.
In the the only other track that short was Long Beach.
Long Beach is a short track, but you also have it was at Dijon. It was Niki Lauda in 1974.
Mm, really?
58 seconds.
Dijon, home of the mustard. And correct, he is a driver who was absolutely the mustard of his time.
He was absolute mustard. So that was
interesting. See that seamless link into Dijon mustard.
It was perfect, perfect. I don't know any other F1 podcast that has a mustard link in it.
No, there you go. Good. Well, it's the first.
That's pretty
fantastic.
Good.
No, it was a very, very quick lap, wasn't it, the weekend?
It was, yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed qualifying with such a short lap. You know, you had cars sort of tripping over themselves in all the way through the weekend in practice, in quali. It was, you know, really exciting, really interesting. And as I said before, you know, this COVID-affected season has really thrown up some unique situations and some tracks that we just do not go to. And I just think it's been one of the best seasons I've known for a long, long time, really. I don't know what you guys think about that.
I'd agree. They really have. I mean, if we think back to March, where we were possibly looking at the whole season being cancelled, you know, what they've put together, what they've pulled out of the bag, the way they've looked at it. And I do believe, I did see an interview with them at the weekend, Ross Brawn's team, who Ross Brawn is now the sort of managing director of F1, the FIA. You know, they looked at this opportunity in this season to do some different things, and apparently for this weekend it was one of his team who the name escapes me, but he came out and said this short track idea would be great. Ross Brawn was, no, I'm not too sure, but you know, go for it, and it's turned out to be an absolute blinder. It's produced a very, very busy, chaotic Grand Prix. It's also, I think, coupled with the fact that it's got a very, very, you know, Bahrain's got a very short pit entry and exit. It's a very quick pit stop here. Yeah. You know, that coupled with a 55-second lap has, you know, it led to an awful lot of chaos that we saw this weekend.
Yeah, Adam, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, actually. I think that especially this weekend's race, I can't remember the last time I was sat at the penultimate race when everything was already decided.
Yeah.
Yet I'm still literally on the edge of my seat, just could not look away from that TV for a second. It was just fantastic. I was a little bit concerned going into it that such a short track was not going to allow for mistakes or you know equalizers, and that you were just simply going to get a very, very clear. The number one team is going to be first and second. The number two team is going to be third.
There's not
and
many corners, was there?
Exactly right. So, but no, as we know, obviously, as we'll come on to, that was not the case by any means or any stretch. But and then you know, extrapolating that back over the rest of the season, same thing. I've just really, really enjoyed this year. We've said it, you know, on previous weeks, that you know, the challenge of going to tracks where they just didn't have abundance of data to go off of,
like Mugello,
or even if you're going back to tracks you have been to before, you're going at different times of year, so there's completely different variables in play. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
I certainly think that there's something that Liberty Media, you know, the F1 rights holders can actually take away from this season and actually look at is you know, shaking things up every year, because quite a long time now we've had, you know, the same sort of race calendar at all the same times of year, going to the same tracks. And, you know, as much as I love the sport, it can get a bit stale sometimes because it's always the same tracks, you know, at the same time of year. I think this certainly shows that by mixing things up, just makes the sport a lot more interesting and a lot more exciting, really.
It could be fantastic. I'm going to wait for the Greenland Grand Prix next year.
Oh, yes. Wonderful. Although we have got a few new tracks coming, haven't we? Because we've got the Vietnam one, and we've got returning to Zandvoort as well. I say
you bring it to the Pittsburgh International Raceway.
That'd be amazing.
That's where the next one needs to be.
Yes, definitely. Right. So me and Ritz discussed about Russell getting into the car at the last podcast, because we had the news that Russell was going to drive for Merck. The more I thought about this coming into this weekend, I thought it threw up a real F1 conundrum to those people on social media, really, because to me, unless you really sort of understand the sport fully, and if you're a casual sort of viewer, I can understand the view that is, if Russell gets into that Merc and he runs really well and wins the race, that means, oh, Hamilton's not that good, you know, it's because it's just the car. If Russell doesn't do well, it's because Russell's a bad driver because he's in the best car and he can't even win in the best car. Now, neither of those statements are actually true. However, I've seen people spouting this rubbish on social media, and it really, really does annoy me. So I don't know what any of your take on that is.
I personally, I couldn't agree with you more. I it was in the front of my mind the whole race weekend, that how, you know, what is this going to do? And you used the phrase, I think, and it was the same one that I had written down, that what does it do to the casual fan, the casual yeah. observer, thinking that, well, if I put him in the car and he wins it, then, you know, it just kind of negates that whole driver argument. I'm sure, you know, what we can come on and talk about it more, but that was certainly a concern of mine, I think, going into that.
Personally, it was always a shame that they put such a good driver like Russell in that car. Because actually, you know, Russell is an extremely accomplished previous champion on many other formula. You know, he is the heir to the throne, almost expected around the paddock, that he is that good. You know, he will be in that Merc or a championship winning car in the future, and he will win championship because he's that good. So putting him in that car, you know, all he's proven is a good driver in a good car, you know, can run very well. I almost wish that they put a semi-rubbish person in that car and actually proved, you know what, it's not just the car. But Rich, you're going to come in there.
Well,
right?
I understand your point, and but for the casual observer, yeah, they might think that, but you know, it's what he's proved. I mean, in terms of what he did this weekend, he absolutely proved without a shadow of a doubt the credentials that he's got. He is the real deal. He is absolutely championship contender material in the next 5 years, I would have thought. To come in at, what is he, 5 inches taller than Bottas and Hamilton? He's the guy 6'1".
Yeah, 6'1".
Six,
yeah.
Six,
six, actually,
one.
I don't know if you heard it, and I don't mean to cut you off, but the funniest comment I heard throughout the weekend was when they were talking to Russell on the pre-race about, you know, him, you know, his much bigger frame and squeezing it into the cockpit that was really, you know, designed for a much shorter guy. And his comment was, yes, I actually felt like Donkey Kong.
But he actually had to wear boots a size smaller for him, yeah. So they would fit in the foot one, yeah. Basically.
You know, the whole package of the car with him in it was a compromise the weekend. So that's number one. He's not... You know, that car hasn't been designed necessarily for him. He's in his own seat, but it's a seat that he had molded in 2019 when he was testing for them last year. So, you know, there was a compromise just with him being in the car. He has to learn a whole new brake bias setup, steering wheel setup, everything else.
I mean, he had to completely unlearn what he learned at Williams.
Exactly.
Correct.
And not only, you know, and on top of all of that, that's why we spoke last week, Dan, and said, look, you know, if he gets, you know, about fifth, anything, that will be amazing. Yep. Anything higher would be a bonus.
Correct.
To be coming out of the first corner, leading it, and not only leading it, but confidently going away.
Yeah.
You know, yes, that's when it had that of remained the situation. Oh, and it did remain the situation for a lot of the race. But, you know, yeah, that argument of people saying, oh, well, it's the car. The fact that, you know, the Mercedes ball dropping, which was pretty spectacular this
weekend.
Yes,
it was. Yeah, and we'll come on to that.
But it showed that not only that, he dealt with the adversity. he could overtake, which seems to be something that Mr. Bottas kind of struggles with. I appreciate he was on old hard tyres rather than a fresher set, but I mean the way he dealt with the adversity twice and came back through. I mean, he showed an absolute plethora of talents in a number of situations, and his stock has just risen pretty much to the top, I would have said, over this weekend. And it goes to prove that, you know, you've got to have both. You've got to have the best car and you've got to have the best driver in there as well, because he made Valtteri look
and I think that's the point though, right? Is the whole thing is, you know, coming back to that casual observer thing, they aren't seeing all of those nuances. They're not seeing the fact that you've got a guy in a car that he doesn't fit, that he's driving against his teammate who's driven that car 17 times before.
Yeah.
Right? On 17 race weekends, he's driving it for the first time. He doesn't even know where all the buttons on the steering wheel. There was at one point where he was screaming into the microphone, into the radio, you know, which one's the overtake button?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Right. Same car, wasn't it?
Because he wanted to make sure that he was getting the start right. And everything that you look at over that weekend, in fairness, he outclassed Bottas at every single step. I get it. Valtteri was on pole. George Russell was 26 milliseconds behind him.
Yeah.
And let's bear in mind, you know, if there's one thing that people will praise Valtteri for, it's his qualifying pace.
100%. He's not going to qualify.
Right now, here's Russell coming in and being a shade under. If you watch the start, he was off the blocks quicker than Valtteri was. He got the better start.
Valtteri's second phase was just dreadful.
His racecraft going into that first series of turns when he actually overtook Bottas was just sublime.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, frankly, he controlled the race. For the guy to be, you know, in that position at the front, he dealt with the race. He dealt with the safety cars. You know, again, he dealt with the adversity. He outclassed Bottas in every element of that race weekend, I think.
Yeah.
And let's not forget, he topped the first two practice sessions.
Yeah, I know. So I've gone, you know, into a bit of Russell's history for any sort of people who are casual viewers, if they listen to this, and you know all what you said, Adam, about Russell being ahead, commanding the race, doing this correct, doing this right, his racecraft. You know, these people aren't coming into F1 having never driven a race car before. You know, so Russell's history. You know, in 2014 he was Formula 4 champion. 2017 he was GP3 champion. He had 4 wins in that season. In 2018 he was F2 champion with 7 wins. You know, that is a man who is used to, all the way through his career, from a child, leading races and being ahead. You know, this man is not a slow driver. You know, he's a fantastic driver. You know, I've seen in interviews previously, both Hamilton and Alonso have stated in interviews that, you know, they highly rate George Russell out of the new crop of drivers. You know, they give him a lot of high praise. You know, so this is a very, very, very good driver going into that seat. Now, okay, so a new section for this weekend, and that is story time with Dan. So
am I gonna nod off, Dan?
No, you're not gonna nod off. You're gonna quite enjoy this, I think. Okay. So, you know, can anyone win in a good car? So story time begins with someone called Luca Badoa. So Luca Badoa in 2009 was reserve driver for Ferrari, and you had Raikkonen and Massa in that car, and they won races that season. So that Ferrari was a race-winning car. Massa had to sit out the last 7 races after surgery because he got hit by a spring in Hungary coming out of Barrichello's car, and it, you know, well, it almost sort of blinded him, or to be fair, almost killed him when it hit him on the helmet. Now, Luca Badoa was drafted in to race in that car. Now, the first race he was in that car in Valencia, his best time in qualifying was 1.5 seconds off of the next best time. So he was plumb last, 1.5 seconds off the next person, you know, on that grid, not even off from his teammate. During the race, He finished plumb last in 17th out of all runners. Raikkonen in the other Ferrari finished third. In the next race in Spa, again, Luca Badoa was last in every session through that weekend. In the race, he ended up in 14th, and again, last of all the cars still running, while Raikkonen in the other Ferrari won that race. You know, it just shows you cannot put anybody in a fast car and expect them to be podium or win the race, you know, and Luca Badoa has proved that, you know, you just can't, I just don't get it. I kind of get it, I suppose, from the casual viewers, but, you know, throw the facts at them and I think their view has to change, really.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it's the casual viewer you're trying to attract.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the challenge, is, you know that, Rich knows that, I know that, all the legions of fans that have been watching this for, you know, years and or generations, that's, we get it, right?
Yeah.
It's convincing, yeah. And marketing it as such so that the casual viewer will watch it and will tune in and you know, help the sport to expand.
That's kind of what makes the sport unique. It is, you know, it is the driver and the car and the team behind the car and the engineering and all of that stuff that they put together. You know, I mean, I suppose the only thing that comes close is perhaps horse racing, where you get, you know, jockeys on certain horses and things like that.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, even then, you know, they can have an off day for whatever reason, but it does make the sport unique. It does make it hard to get your head around sometimes. You know, I had a friend of mine from school who just used to say it wasn't really a sport and that, you know, it's just driving. And it's a case of, oh my goodness, no, you don't
get... The fitness regime those guys go through would make a footballer cry.
Yes, no, it's ridiculous.
It really would.
Absolutely. Right. You're dead right. Really, you're dead right.
I mean, when you say you can't really compare it to other sports, I mean, like, to me, you know, if you get a half-decent striker in a pretty awful football team, he's not going to get much delivery, you know, he's not going to be able to score that many goals. You put him in, I don't follow football, but whoever the top team is now, Liverpool, they won the title, didn't they? You put him in a Liverpool side or a Barcelona side, and he's getting inch-perfect delivery from the wings, he's going to look a better striker than you know. So yes, the car does make a difference, but it happens in every sport. You know, if you're in the best team or wherever, it does happen in every sport. That doesn't negate what the driver or that striker is actually able to do. You know, it's just, it's madness. But there you go.
That was Dan's story time about Luca Badoa.
Luca Badoa.
Yeah, well, it was a blast from the past, isn't it? There we
it
are.
Was, yeah. Yeah, it
but
was.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
Yeah. What was also nice to see was Romain Grosjean back at the track. He obviously wasn't racing, but there was a lovely touching scenes of him hugging the medical staff that obviously saved his life and pulled him out of the rubble of his car, really. And there was a really nice interview, really interesting interview that he had with Martin Brundle. And it was amazing what Grosjean was sort of, you know, the information he was giving up about, you know, once he went through the barrier, he said he was in that car and he eventually realized that it was on fire. First of all, he was sat there thinking, there's a lot of orange behind me. You know, it's not sunset. It's already nighttime. And then he sort of thought, right, I'm on fire. I need to get out. He tried to get out and couldn't. And he said he sat back down in the car. He then tried again and couldn't. So he sat there and he said he suddenly became at peace with himself and thought, okay, I'm going to die and it's fine. I'm at peace with that, apparently. This is all happening like within that 39 seconds that he took to get out.
Yeah.
But then he gave
Lauda, death a name, didn't he?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it, but he gave it a name. It was quite a moving thing to hear him talk about that. And then he said he thought of Niki Lauda and he thought, no, actually, I'm not going to go out like Niki Lauda did, you know, and he thought of his children and thought, actually, no, I'm not going to die today. And he tried getting out again and twisted his head round so he could get past the barrier, and he said it actually worked, but his foot was stuck, and then he pulled his foot and his boot came off, and then he had to put his hands in the fire to just bring himself out of the car. And then he said, the you know, like a guardian angel, Ian Roberts, the medical staff, was there to pull him out. And it just, the whole interview was just amazing to watch, really, and just to see this state of mind of Grosjean, you know, during those moments he was sat in the car was incredible, really.
Yeah, it's good to see him up and about. It's good to see him, you know, being able to visit the track literally a week later and yeah. give his thanks and everything. It's that was a very, very close call last weekend. And it's, you know, I understand that he is now finished for the season. There's no way he's being Abu Dhabi.
Yes, he can't race in Abu Dhabi. He wanted to, do, but he can't because of his injuries. But Merck have offered him a drive, mm-hmm. not a driver's in a seat in F1, but probably in a practice session or something next year. Yeah. So he doesn't finish his F1 career in a barrier.
Yeah. I thought that was a really nice thing for Toto to come out and say. I also feel like it was a little bit of a shot at his previous teams because he said, because he actually said, you know, we'll give you a shot. He said, especially if none of your previous teams are prepared to do it, come see me because we will. I thought, That was a kind of a spoken from a man
who I think is going to be looking at the whole F1 kind of sport from a very global kind of chairman type role.
I agree.
Okay, so we come on to qualifying. So as we said, Bottas was on pole, only 0.02 of a second faster than Russell. So you know, fantastic performance by George Russell. And it's the first time he's been beaten by a teammate in 36 races. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it shows how good he is. And it's a shame for that record to come to an end, but I'm sure he doesn't care about that because he got to, you know, race in a Merc, really. Verstappen was in third, while Albon was down in 12th. Didn't have a good qualifying.
No, he did not.
It was quite telling what they said because... part of the reason why he said he was down in 12th is he hadn't done any running on the softs in practice. But the reason that he hadn't was because Red Bull wanted to save two sets of softs for him in qualifying because they weren't confident of him getting through. So it's kind of telling in a way. And it was his undoing because he just, you know, he ended up in 12th. So another section of the show, this is sort of Dan's humble pie section. So last week I said that Albon will be at Red Bull next year, but I don't think they can ignore Perez anymore, can they?
They can't, no. They definitely can't. I think Alex's performance this weekend was it just wasn't there. It wasn't what they need. It wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And the other thing that they've got to start thinking is that we all know what a charger Max Verstappen is. I don't know. I'm starting to think whether he could string a season together for a championship.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
I'm wondering whether he could. I do wonder if he's got that capability to think rationally. Although, you know, you could argue that the incident this weekend, you know, on the first lap when he came out was him desperately trying to, you know, get out of the way of two cars that were clearly on a trajectory. And it's just unfortunate that the gravel track...
And he hit that gravel, didn't he? The
same colour as the tarmac. So I think he thought he'd just got to drive around it. But yeah, I they have got to have somebody more, I don't know, dare I say it, Bottas-esque in that second seat.
Yeah.
They've got to be
I
solid.
Also think...
Go on,
I also think Verstappen is, to your point, I don't think he'll stand... the pressure. I think if he was in a runaway car and a runaway season, not a big deal, right? I think that's why I can't wait for the Hamilton successor to get into a championship winning car. Let's hope it's George Russell, because I just don't think that Max can deal with, whether inside his team or outside his team, a close competitor. I mean, I did hear one that that was his fifth DNF due to a first lap incident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a little bit of pressure and kind of, you know, maybe it's just arrogance too, in that opening phase of his race. Now, that being said, when you come back to the Albon thing, it won't be Albon next year is my guess. I don't know that I'm ready to jump on the Perez bandwagon quite as much as everybody seemed to be fawning over him recently. I have a little bit of a difference. So there was, you know, they were talking about him. Oh, well, it must have been nice. You know, it's finally to finally win a race and do it under your own merit. Was it though?
No, I heard that as well.
I don't think it was under his own merit. No. The only reason was because the two Mercs had their catastrophic phase of the race that we already know about. Yeah. But the Verstappen and Leclerc were taken out of the race by, I think, and I know that, you know, the other opinion seemed to be Leclerc. I think that was Perez's fault. Ooh, I think he came absolutely. Leclerc was absolutely diving up the inside. Perez should have known that he was there. He came across erratically and cut out that lunge. He was the only car out of those three that got away unscathed. So he took those two competitors out. So, you know, through no fault of their own, I believe, Verstappen and Leclerc were ejected from the race. And then Perez was able to take in and take advantage of the safety car because of his position on the track. And that's ultimately why he was able to come through and win that race. Without that first lap incident and without the catastrophic mess up at Mercedes, that guy is nowhere near that podium.
However, you've got to be there to capitalize on those moments.
You have, and
does seem to be there.
Sure,
he has the awareness around him, and I don't think there was anything intentional. You don't want to make contact in these cars because it's such a gamble. You know, you get a puncture, lose a tire. Yeah. We've seen it so many times in the past where, you know, people have been cut off and the rear tire has been deflated by a front wing end plate or whatever. So, however, I do think, you know, the Leclerc Verstappen thing was on the first lap. So, and he was, you know, he was at the back of the grid after that first lap. So whilst he did take advantage of the pit stop at the safety car, he did have to come through the field. However, I do agree that the bigger incident is the Mercedes total fumble in the pits and all the rest of it, which enabled him to be where he is. And you know, I think there was a couple of mess ups on pit stops for Daniel Ricciardo and for Sainz as well, where potentially they missed virtual safety car stops, and those two could have been at the very sharp end as well come the end, given what happened to Mercedes. So yeah, I get what you say. I think the on merit thing, I did sort of have a bit of a sucking of teeth moment as well. Mm-hmm. I thought, mm-hmm. Yeah, you kind of took advantage of the circumstances there, Sergio. But I'll tell you what, little fact about Sergio Perez's win, that's the longest anybody's had to wait for a maiden Grand Prix win. 190 races.
It is. 100%. I've got that in the little racing point bit for the race, actually. But yeah, you're right. It is the longest wait for a win. Number of starts between starting
I think he has driven extremely well this year. I mean, he's always there or thereabouts.
But I mean, Adam, it's not often that we sort of disagree on fundamentals like that, but I would put that incident squarely at Leclerc's door.
That's fine.
I would as well.
So did everybody else, including Leclerc.
Well, there you go. I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean,
he should be his defence lawyer or something. Charles, it wasn't you. It was the other fella. Come on.
When you see the overhead shot, you know, Perez did leave space. You know, there is space for Leclerc there. It was a late lunge by Leclerc. I think it was a bit impetuous. You know, it's the first lap. You don't need to make a lunge at that, I don't think. I don't know.
Why not? I think you got to
the
make
race
a lunge.
Isn't one on the, the race isn't one on the first corner, is it?
Sometimes.
Just ask Prost and Senna that, I suppose. No.
Exactly.
There you go. So you had Leclerc in fourth, which was a great lap from him in that Ferrari, particularly because... I think
he totally got in the pits afterwards. That was it. Take the keys out of the ignition, chuck him over. That's it. I can't go any quicker. That was that. And he didn't go out again. And to be fair to him, that was a blooming good lap. I mean, he totally out-qualified that car completely.
It was.
He did fantastically well in that quali lap.
You had Perez in fifth and Stroll down in tenth, which was, you know,
expected.
Always good to see.
Expected.
Rounded out the rest, you had Kvyat in sixth, which is a really good performance by Kvyat, actually, all weekend, to be honest. Ricciardo in seventh, Sainz in eighth, Gasly ninth, as I said, Stroll 10, looking a bit in the field. Yeah, Vettel was 13th, Norris was in 15th. Bad qualifying session for Norris, actually. Jack Aitken in Russell's car, or, you know, the car that he vacated to go into the Merc, qualified in 18th, where Russell normally qualifies in 14th sort of area. So it shows again, you know.
Not the car, though. It's not the car. It's
lending more credence to your earlier argument. Exactly.
Exactly. And then you had Fittipaldi, Pietro Fittipaldi, last in what would have been Grosjean's car. So on to the race then. So, okay, so Merc. Okay, this is very interesting, isn't it? This is a good talking point. So Russell, as we've said, had an absolute lightning start, took Bottas. I think he coped with the safety car restart very well after the Perez, Verstappen and Leclerc crash. He got away again on that. And as we've said, he pretty much commanded that race for about 70% of the running of it. And he was in total control. It was a really, really impressive drive to that point. But then you had what was apparently down to a radio miscommunication during the double pit stop for Mercedes. It ended up that Russell was coming in, but part of the pit crew thought that Bottas was coming in first. So they took Bottas's front tyres out and they had Russell's rear tyres, because part of the pit crew had the message that Russell was coming in first, and ended up putting two of Bottas's tyres on Russell's car and two of Russell's tyres on his car. So then Russell leaves, Bottas comes in behind, and everyone's running around thinking, well, what do we do? Because we now don't have tyres for Bottas and we can't find them. Well, the reason why you can't find them is because two of them are on Russell's car.
Yeah.
So you've got this sort of head scratching for a moment. Bottas is sat there, but must feel like an absolute age sat in that car. And they ended up putting the same tyres they've just taken off on to get him back out. And then as a result of that, Russell then had to come back in the pits in the next lap to put his own tyres on, because otherwise there'd be a penalty there. Well, in fact, he could be disqualified for using too many sets of tyres over a weekend. Turns out, luckily, he hasn't been. Merck had been fined for that moment. Mm-hmm. And actually, which begs the question, had that happened to Hamilton and he wasn't disqualified, which he should have been disqualified, by the way, people will be all over social media saying, oh, Hamilton gets favourable treatment by the FIA again.
I do wonder.
But you don't hear about it. Now it's Russell.
No, I do. I don't know whether it's that. I do wonder if it's where Russell ended up at the end of the race. Probably meant it was easier to sort of let it go. Russell have won the Grand Prix, could it have been a different story? Could the stewards have taken a slightly dimmer view?
I don't think within the letter of the race law that it was a disqualification infraction, because you have a number of laps within which you can return to the pits and correct the mistake.
No. Okay, so that rule only applies if you've put mixed compounds, but they are your sets of tyres. Having a Bottas set on his car, he has now used too many sets of tyres across the weekend.
Yeah.
So that three lap doesn't apply. It should be an automatic disqualification. Because exactly. I thought that initially, but I've since listened to it and I've heard a few people break down what happened. And they said, yes, had you had mixed compound, because Bottas had that at Williams a couple of seasons ago. He had mixed compounds on, he came back in within three laps and changed them. But because they were his sets of tyres, he hasn't used too many sets. So it was okay. Because a Bottas set went on Russell, it means Russell has used more sets than is allowed over a weekend, and which is automatic disqualification.
But it was a mixed set, though.
But it doesn't matter. The two tyres of Bottas that were on his car tipped him over using more sets of tyres than his.
Okay. Okay.
He seemed to be gaining an advantage, which is why it should, in the letter of the law, be a disqualification. However, I think they had to. I think the conversation that Merck had was, we can probably see from Delta and lap times that there probably wasn't an advantage gain.
Yeah,
they could see it was a total and utter 100% cock up of enormous magnitude that basically resulted in, you know, him going through the pits twice and, you know, all of the confusion.
And I think common sense prevailed.
It did.
My point to that was, you know, had that been Hamilton, you would have all the haters on social media saying,
yeah,
it only happened, it, you know, that decision was only done that because it's Hamilton, kind of thing. You know, it just kind of...
Yeah, that's fair.
It kind of, it's important to remember these moments because that dispels the myth that when Hamilton has a favourable decision in the future, it's not, oh, it only ever happens to Hamilton. Well, no, it doesn't. It happens to other people as well.
Yeah, you know, exactly. That's fair comment, sir.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, after everything played out, you know, of that mix-up, you had Russell coming out and just behind Bottas, and then he did that sublime overtaking move on Bottas, which he had his elbows out properly and just brave and just, unbelievable.
He took him to school.
Yeah,
took him to school.
Absolutely amazing. Bottas must have been thinking, like, who is this kid? Like, what is going on? And then once he'd passed Bottas, you know, he was like a scolded cat and he was off and he was chasing down Perez. And then you just had this, he then got a puncture. And, you know, when Merck came onto the radio and said, you've got a puncture, you just heard that heartbreaking scream from Russell was in just like, no, like, I can win this race. And he had to come in and pit again.
He knew he could win it as well because when he got past Valtteri, Stroll was up next. He took Stroll, took Ocon, was honing in on Perez with, you know, I think he had, you know, 10 laps to go, and it was a case of I've got this. I have got.
Yeah, he would. Yeah, he would absolutely have taken Perez in those last 10, no doubt.
Yeah, it was just heartbreaking for him. It really was heartbreaking.
Apparently, Bono, they said. Because the commentary I watched, which was the Pauper's Channel 4 commentary, because I have to stay up late because I don't have Sky, they were sort of suggesting, I hope it's not a tyre sensor failure and that he actually hasn't got a puncture and it's a sensor that's failed. But apparently Bono pointed it out and they kept out for a lap and he said he could feel it.
Russell did say, yeah, the car was a bit squirrely and whatever, so
it was starting to crab down the straights because
it was
just
when the radio broadcast was made on the Sky coverage, the commentators were actually in the midst of talking about something else, and they only half heard it, and when it first came up, they thought it was Bottas who had been told
I was
listening to them, but I had seen George Russell's picture came up and you heard Bono's voice. I'm thinking, please, no, because first of all, my heart started to break for the kid. And then maybe I'm like, well, now what, which is wrong? Is the graphic wrong or is the information wrong? But then I said, no, that was definitely Bono's voice. And then within a couple of seconds, the commentators, and then you could hear them. They were hearts breaking for him as they realized it. You know, what else could possibly go wrong? But that's the final nail. There's no way you can come back.
I mean,
two extra pit stops.
You ended up at the end of the race. You know, Russell still got his first points. He ended up in ninth, and he got the fastest lap, so he got 3 points. Bottas ended up in eighth. I mean, it was heartbreaking, but actually, you know, if you're George Russell, you're sat there thinking, okay, I've had a win taken away from me, but my stock has risen massively in Formula One, and I've more or less made that Merck seat my own whenever that chance comes now.
You know,
year after next.
Yeah.
Without shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so race winner, so on to racing point. So this is Dan's 360 about turn section now, so there's a few sections in this weekend, and that is where I'm going to say Perez is a great driver. So I know I wasn't really a big fan of him before, but he actually is a great driver. His management of the tires, you know, management of just keeping his head cool when things are going against him, he's proven it over and over again. I get your point, Adam, that, you know, okay, you've lucked into the race as such, But he is always there. He's always there to pick up the pieces. You know, he's got a plethora of podiums now. He always seems to be there. He can make the tyres last. He can race well. Yeah, I
had it not been for the engine, he'd have been second last, last
yeah.
weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. So it was a double podium for Racing Point. You had Stroll third. Now this is my point that it comes to what you said about Perez. So my question is my criticism of Stroll valid? Because I still don't think he's worthy of a lot of podiums that he's actually got. But the same argument I've used for Perez is, well, you've got to be there to pick up the pieces. So... Is he there to pick up the pieces, or has he generally looked into these podiums?
I think there's a bit of both. The only thing I would say about him is that I saw his post-race interview, and he really is quite hateful and punchable when he's talking. He basically said, I was a bit disappointed with third because I think, you know, we could have won that today.
Yeah,
and I'm just like, what damn planet are you on, Sunshine?
Yeah. He went through. Yeah, the two things that got my back up was because I do think he's just a spoiled little rich kid, and I don't like him the way he comes across.
No.
But he was very, very much, yes, you know, I could have won. I'm disappointed because I could have won that race today. Addendum: no, you couldn't. And secondly, the entire race. Now, bearing in mind, you know, the whole paddock is fawning over Checo and his final win in the Grand Prix. You know, everything's come together and just kind of, you know, as I say, fawning over him. Couldn't congratulate him enough. Stroll said nothing about Perez the whole way through that interview until the very, very end as an afterthought. Oh, well, yeah, of course, I'm pleased for Sergio.
Yeah.
I just found it a little bit objectionable.
You're right, Adam. I get it. F1 drivers have to be, you know, you have to be selfish and you have to be driven and focused, and that, you know, they get in the car, and even if you're on the back of the grid, you want to be winning it. You know, you'll sit there and go, I will take every opportunity. I will.
Sure.
Win. But there is something. There's just something about him which is just. It's just really unlikable. I can't.
Yeah.
It is the fact that he is, yes, I get it. He's a son of a ridiculously rich human being, and you know, he's had doors opened for him his whole life. You know, but I simply cannot warm to the guy. I mean, regardless of, you know, most of the drivers on the grid, you know, have come from. You have to come from money in order to do this sport from the grassroots.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Hamilton's sort of story is not typical. You know, most of the guys, I've got a friend of mine whose son races in karts, and you know, I know how much, you know, personal sacrifice they make financially for him to do that, and he's 8, you know.
Right.
You get to the stage where, you know, you're into your teenage years and you've got to find sponsorship and you've got to get it because the money is ridiculous. But you know, there's just something about Lance that I just cannot warm to in the slightest. You know, Kimi Raikkonen is not the chattiest. He doesn't dole out the compliments, but we all love him.
And that's the thing.
I think is, you know, to your point, yes, you have to be, you know, single-minded. Yes, you have to be cutthroat, but you can be classy with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can say
that's the word,
you
Adam.
Can,
classy.
You can say the right things, even if you don't mean them.
No.
Yeah.
Just be classy.
Is the word. He's not being classy. Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's
also
the word.
He's also not very good. But there we are.
Yeah.
Okay. So onto Ferrari, and we had Leclerc, where I think he was at fault. I know Adam thinks possibly Perez. Probably a racing incident, you know, between the two, really. He's got a 3-place grid drop for the next race in Abu Dhabi because of that. Is Leclerc having a bit of a coming of age season, and is he having a bit of a plan season? Because he's got flashes of brilliance, but there's been a few mistakes crept in this year as well, I think.
I think it's a tricky car to drive, the Ferrari. I don't think it's particularly... It's got better, it's got quicker.
Yeah.
He's obviously got more used to it, but I think fundamentally it is a twitchy car to drive. you know, I think Russell gave a very good interview at the weekend when he said the difference between the Williams and that Merc is he says that Merc will just do exactly, I'm in control of it.
Yeah.
It does exactly as I want. He said the Williams, you feel like you're hanging on for dear life sometimes because it's not doing what you want it to do.
Yeah.
And I think there's an element of the Ferrari that's probably a bit like that. You know, it's not fully controllable yet. And Leclerc is, you know, he's still got some growing to do. He's still got some experience to gain as well. But fundamentally, I think he's, you know, he is absolutely title contender material in the next next few years. That's my view.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair. Okay, and then you had Vettel, who ended up in 12th. He was racing with an old engine because he had engine trouble in just before qualifying. They had to swap it out for an aged engine, which is slightly down on power, but ended up 12th, which is pretty much where he's finished most of the season anyway. So I don't know if that engine really was that much down on power. there you go. On to Red Bull. So as we know, Max was out on lap one. Albon, quite a confusing race. He didn't seem to know what was happening through the race either. He ended up in 6th. Again, as we've said, I don't think Red Bull can ignore Perez anymore. Something interesting kind of route that I heard for this was that apparently Perez has some options for 2022. So what they were saying was, and Albon has been confirmed remaining in the Red Bull program beyond this year. So I heard somebody talking saying, okay, so why don't you have Checo in the Red Bull next year, give him time to work out his 2022 options and make them come alive, and you have Albon sitting out next year, learning from, you know, possibly Checo, from Verstappen, doing some sim work, trying to get the grips of that car, and put him back in 2022. It's a good option. It's something that could work, I think.
Yeah, or alternatively, you could also take him out of that car and then leave him out of it.
Yeah, you could do. I think there is something more to what's going on with Albon there. I think he's not that bad a driver. I think he's pretty good, but we shall see.
I'd put him right up there with Stroll. No,
and Luca Badoa?
And Perez. I'm just kidding.
He's definitely better than Luca Badoa.
Late review on Luca Badoa.
But then, quite frankly, I'm better than Luca Badoa, I reckon.
I've seen you drive your TVR, Rich. I don't think you are better than Luca.
No, it's probably.
okay, so McLaren. So we had Sainz, really good race in 4th. Norris ended up in 10th. He actually made up 10 places on the first lap, Norris, because he had grid penalties as well due to engine change, I think. He made up 10 places on the first lap. Now, really interesting fight for that constructors' third position, and with Perez and Stroll both on the podium, Racing Point have leapfrogged McLaren in that race now, and are now 11 points ahead of McLaren. So it's going to be interesting in the last race of the season next week, see what happens in that title fight, really.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting for that midfield.
Yeah, really interesting. I think Renault is slightly out of it now. I think it's probably between McLaren and Racing Point.
I'd like to apologise to McLaren. It's clearly my fault. The minute I backed them to become third in the constructors,
but
things haven't gone great for them.
McLaren could go well in Abu Dhabi though, because it's quite an aero track. Yeah. So I still think it's all to play. It's all to play, and you know, I think McLaren could still do that really. On to Renault, you had Ocon. On the
welcome
podium
to the 2020 season, Esteban Ocon. He's turned up.
Welcome. First time I can actually speak about him. I don't think of really mentioning him any other time. You had Ricciardo in 5th. Sorry, go on.
No, you'll say, yes, he had a great race. His qualifying still wasn't great, though.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't at all. He's had he hasn't had a great season, but it's his season, first season back. It'd be interesting to see what he can do against Alonso next year.
and I am ecstatic, as always. I will mention every podcast now. I am ecstatic about Alonso coming back. It was great to see him in Bahrain doing some press stuff, and the excitement is just building and building and building until you put the best driver of his generation in a Formula One car again next season.
I didn't realize you were an Alonso fan, Dan.
Did you not? No, of course not. Yeah, of course not.
I don't think
it's never come across.
No, he's never mentioned it at all. He's kept it very quiet, hasn't he, Adam?
Okay, so on to the AlphaTauri. So Kvyat put in a really good performance this weekend. It's clearly too late for him. I think he's going to be out of that race seat next season. And you had the Gasman, Gasly, in 11th. He just didn't really have the pace all Sunday, Gasly. It was a quiet race for him, really, which is a shame. Alfa Romeo, you had Kimi down in 14th. Giovinazzi in 13th. Again, a quiet race for them. And Haas, P15 for Kevin Magnussen. Reasonable race for him, actually. And then 17th, last in the field for Pietro Fittipaldi.
I think Haas now have the same number of points as George Russell.
Yeah, correct. Yes, I think they do. Yeah, I think they do. And then Williams, you had Jack Aitken. Apart from hitting the wall and causing the Merck meltdown, it was actually a reasonably solid race for Jack Aitken for his first F1 race in a Williams car as well, which was difficult to drive. And you had Latifi retiring with car issues. Jack Aitken in the car in the weekend, putting a good account for himself, I think.
I think he did. He stayed consistent, and he was, to finish first you must finish, and he certainly did the latter.
100%. So next weekend, we are off to Abu Dhabi, which is often a snooze fest. Overtaking is pretty hard there. But as this season has proven, you just never know. You just never know what to expect. So it could be an extremely exciting race. And will Hamilton be there? So apparently news is he is improving. He is getting better. But there was something saying that anyone who had a positive test in F1 in Bahrain cannot travel to Abu Dhabi. They don't know if that extends to drivers as well, but it's possible that actually Russell may get another chance in a Mercedes in Abu Dhabi as well, which would be fantastic. It'd be really, it'd be great to see again.
It would be fantastic. We'll have to keep tabs on the press, really, and see what happens.
Yeah. So quick predictions for next weekend. So, Adam, your predictions?
I'm going Russell for the win. I don't think Hamilton will be back.
Yeah.
I want Russell for the win. Max in second. Bottas in third.
Okay. And Rich.
Oh, I knew you could ask this, and I'm just. Oh, I don't know. I did say I had a good friend of mine, Mr. Alex Jones, who put a tenner on Russell to win this weekend.
Not the Alex Jones of Britbart fame, is it?
Not.
A different Alan Jones.
It's not the Welsh one on the One Show either.
Okay.
No. A very good mate of mine, and he has started listening to this podcast. So
welcome
there. He 10 laps from the end, he sort of pulled out. He was doing the live betting thing, and he pulled out at 10 laps. As he said, he managed to clamber out of the Grosjean-esque, out of the smouldering ruins of that bet 10 laps from home. So, he's done well with that. He had 7-4 on as well for him. My money's going to go on. I think you're right. I think Hamilton won't be back. Do you know what? Let's. It's the last one of the series. I'm going to go with you, Adam. I'm going to sling Russell in to win it. Let's go for it. Russell, Bottas second, and who are we going to put in third? I am going to put Lando Norris in third.
Lando Norris.
Ooh, right on.
Okay. Interesting. That is out of left field. So I am going to go for Russell for the win also. I think that's going to be...
I'm on board the bandwagon. Yes.
I think it's more hope from us, isn't it, really?
Let's
put it in there for some good vibes. I am going to go... Bottas second, and I'm going to go man of the moment Perez in third.
There you go. That was nearly my shout as well. So we'll see what happens.
So there we go. So I hope you enjoyed this week's Sakir review. And I hope you join us next week where we will finish the season at Yas Marina in Abu Dhabi. So Rich and Adam, do you want to bid farewell?
Say good evening and good night to, or goodbye to everybody. I don't know what time you read this or watch this or listen to it. You don't watch or read it either, do you? And it's been nice. It's been nice that we've had. It's one of those seminal moments in F1 where a new breed is born.
Yes,
and I think
a star is born.
A star is born this weekend coming. So fantastic, and thank you very much.
Agreed. Have a great week, everybody.
Yeah. So for you at home, if you have enjoyed this, please give us a follow on Twitter, which is @lights_F1. At Season Ticket DSR, that's Delta Sierra Romeo, or at Dougie Stone Radio. And until next week, goodbye and drive safely.
It's Formula One.